Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Deborah Bird. Ever wonder what it would be like to fall into a black hole? Astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson can tell you about it. Tyson is director of the Hayden Planetarium at the American Museum of Natural History in New York. His latest book is a collection of essays called Death by Black Hole and Other Cosmic Quandaries. He spoke with Earth and Sky's Jorge Salazar on why people should care about studying the stars, about an imaginary one-way trip into a black hole, and about the very real possibility of a killer asteroid making its way in the future to Earth. Here's Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Dr. Tyson, welcome to Earth and Sky.
Great to be on the show.
May I ask you an astrophysics question, and where are you from?
Well, originally, the atoms of the Big Bang, depending on how far back you want to take the question. Most of my atoms, the hydrogen in my body, is traceable to the Big Bang, but it requires several generations of stars being born, living out their lives, and dying to enrich the galaxy with the heavy elements that then make life, planets and life. So that's where I'm from, as the rest of us.
We at Earth and Sky talk a lot to scientists about changes that are happening on this planet. May I ask you just a general question about astronomy? Why do we even study astronomy? Why should we put resources into something that, to a lot of people, just doesn't seem to relate to them?
If you look historically, the study of the universe was more sort of a luxury of curiosity, conducted by nations that were wealthy enough to have the free time available to devote one's thoughts to such things rather than worrying about where your next meal was coming from. But it was not until the 20th century where we began to realize that Earth is not just some island isolated from the rest of the cosmos. In fact, we are a participant in a cosmic drama. For example, we get hit by asteroids that come from space. These are asteroids that have rendered life extinct in the past on Earth. The most famous of these is the Mount Everest-sized asteroid that fell 65 million years ago and took out the dinosaurs, prying open an ecological niche that allowed the then rodents running underfoot to evolve into something more ambitious than what they were of the day, including primates such as us. And so, and not only that, there are bursts of high-energy particles that travel from the sun to the Earth and bathe Earth's magnetic field. One of the consequences is the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis, and it's duplicated in the south as well. And so we are a participant. And not only that, we look at our nearby planets, one to our left. We've got Venus, sometimes called our sister planet. It's the same size. We have about the same gravity. But there's a runaway greenhouse effect going on there. It's 900 degrees Fahrenheit. I did the calculation. It would cook a 16-inch pizza in 9 seconds if you put it out on the windowsill. And so something bad happened on Venus. I want to know what that is so that I can have some sense of what the consequences of the knob turning that's going on in Earth's atmosphere today. The knob turning is, of course, the human-generated influences on the stability of our climate. And then you look just to our right, you get Mars, which once had a surface of running water. It was an oasis at some time in its distant past. And it's bone dry today. The water's gone. Maybe it's in a permafrost beneath the surface, perhaps some evaporated, but it's gone. And it's a couple of hundred degrees below zero, and it's as dry as a desert. Something bad happened on Mars as well. So to study these nearby planets in our own solar system has got to give us deep insights into not only what effect we might be having on Earth, but also what our place is in the cosmos. And this is sort of fundamental understandings that affect how you treat not only each other, but the environment in which you live.
Dr. Tyson, I'd like you to tell me a little bit about your new book, Death by Black Hole. What is that like? What is Death by Black Hole like?
In my newly released book, Death by Black Hole, that title is drawn from one of the chapters, which appears in a section called When the Universe Turns Bad, all the ways that the cosmos wants to kill us. And a lot of people spend a lot of time celebrating how much of a cradle of life Earth is. But in fact, if you take a step back and just take another look, you realize that 99% of all species that have ever thrived on Earth are now extinct. And look at what we do just to avoid having Earth kill us. By whatever means, volcanoes, tsunamis, earthquakes, cyclones. The list is endless of ways the Earth wants to kill us. And so I try to open people's eyes to all the other ways that Earth bad things. And one of them, which is, it's not something you should worry about tomorrow, but it's something to think about, is what would happen if you fell into a black hole? There are black holes out there, one in the center of our galaxy, a big one, and there are others sort of scattered around the galaxy. So I just thought I would go through the exercise of what would happen to you if you fell into a black hole, which is kind of fun. It's sort of morbidly curious to think about what happens if you fall into a black hole. And if you do, what happens is the gravity at your feet becomes systematically greater and greater than the gravity at your head. This is, of course, in a feet-first dive. And as you approach the center of the black hole, this difference in gravity becomes unacceptable to your body. You know, initially, it might even feel good. You're stretching. Everybody likes to stretch. But at some point, that stretching force becomes greater than the bonds of the molecules in your flesh. And then your body just simply snaps into two pieces. And then those two pieces, as they continue to descend, feel the same effect as you previously felt, and then they snap each into two pieces. So you go from 1 to 2 to 4 to 8 to 16, and just your body bifurcates its way all the way down to the center until you're this stream of atoms reaching the singularity. And that's not even the worst part, if you can believe that. What's worse is we know from relativity and the general relativity of Einstein that the fabric of space and time in the vicinity of a black hole funnels. It gets narrower and narrower. So not only are you stretched, you're actually extruded through that fabric of space, like toothpaste through a tube. And so we have a word for this, which is remarkable. It's called spaghettification, which I think is one of the best words of all time. The fact that we have a word for how you die by falling into a black hole. And so black holes are things to avoid, because once you fall and you never come out, even if you did somehow manage to survive the fall, because nothing that moves anything slower than light can ever get out. And so light doesn't get out. Nothing we know of goes faster than light, so nothing gets out. It's black. It's a hole. It's a black hole.
Dr. Tyson, speaking of life in strange places, do you think that there's life elsewhere besides what we're familiar with here on Earth?
I'm given no reason to doubt that possibility. Life, when it's around, thrives on Earth. It's a struggle, of course, but you know, every square inch of Earth, you look, you're going to find something living there. But new species emerge, others go extinct. So the idea of life is a very fertile one here on Earth, even if one species does not live the whole, you know, several billion years that all of life has been around. And so if you look at what life is made of, it's made of the most common ingredients in the universe. The number one atom in your human body is hydrogen, part of the water molecule. The number two is oxygen, once again, part of the water molecule. And then carbon, and then nitrogen. And then my favorite element of them all, other. So that's the sequence of elements in the human body, or life in general. And then you look at the sequence of elements in the universe. Number one is hydrogen. Number two is helium, which is chemically inert, so you couldn't do anything with it anyway. But next is oxygen, next is carbon, next is nitrogen, and next is, of course, other. And so we are made of the most common ingredients around. Not only that, the foundation of our chemistry is based on carbon. And carbon is the most fertile of all elements on the periodic table of elements, you might remember from chemistry class. Most fertile meaning you can make more molecules using the carbon atom than you can all other kinds of molecules combined. So what more fertile chemistry could you possibly base life on than carbon? And carbon is plentiful across the universe. And also look at how quickly life arose in the early history of Earth. It took just a couple of hundred million years, small compared with the billions of years that have passed. And so you realize life, even if we have problems making it in the lab, Earth had no problems whatsoever. Not only that, it's made of the most common ingredients. Who are we to suggest that Earth alone in the universe carries life? That would be inexcusably egocentric.
To get a little more Earth-centric here, would you, and this is regarding something you mentioned earlier about these asteroids that every once in a while they do crazy stuff here on Earth. Would you like to put people at ease at all about the threat of a killer asteroid?
No. We should never be at ease about the threats of asteroids. Earth plows through several hundred tons of meteors a day, most of which are small particles that harmlessly vaporize and descend to Earth as dust. Others occasionally are larger, and they will survive the passage through the atmosphere and hit the surface. And so many of the world's supply of meteorites, which is what you call it after it hits the surface, after it's a meteor en route, that meteorites, they survive, and they're kind of curiosities unless they're big, and then they're threats. They get big, they start leaving craters, then they start casting Earth's crust into the atmosphere, causing widespread fires, causing, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. And they are real, they will happen again, and what's odd here is that we have a means of preventing it. We have a space program, we know how to encounter asteroids and comets, we've done it already. So to go extinct because an asteroid comes and takes us out, knowing that we had the power to prevent it, we would be the laughingstock of life forms in the galaxy. Of course, the dinosaurs had no recourse. They don't have opposable thumbs, their brains are small, and all, you know, every way we stereotype their what they were, they had nothing they could do about it. They could just sit there as the asteroid fell and just contemplate their navel. So, do dinosaurs have navels? I don't know. So, whatever they'd contemplate, that's what they would have been doing. And then they're now extinct. So, you might ask, surely there are other things to worry about, like where your next meal is coming from. True. But some fraction of all of us, some investment of our time, energy, emotion, and money, should go to a protection plan against asteroids. Because if one comes, the loss is catastrophic. An asteroid the size just a kilometer across would be large enough to destabilize civilization as we know it. And so for a tiny investment of ourselves, we could possibly build a sort of protection plan. We do this every day with insurance plans for your home, flood insurance and fire insurance. It's not an unusual calculation to make. We're just not trained to do that for cosmic threats, only for Earth-based threats. But the time has come.
What to you is the most remarkable story that the universe itself is telling scientists?
Oh, it's easy for me to answer that. I think the most remarkable fact about the universe is that these elements that comprise the human body and life on Earth are traceable to the actions of stars in our past, billions of years ago. High-mass stars, which we know are the kind that make these heavy elements, manufactures these heavy elements in the crucible of their core, they then explode, scattering their enriched contents across the galaxy, allowing new star systems to form that have ingredients that make planets and life, so that we have a cosmic connectivity to the operations of the universe that I think is almost spiritual in the depth of feeling it could bring over you when you just stand out in the night sky on a clear night and look up and realize that not only are we in this universe here on Earth, but the universe is, in fact, in us. And I know of no more profound thought than that, and that is the product of discoveries we made in the 20th century about what stars do, how they're born, live out their lives, and die. And I like to think, well, what new discoveries will come in the 21st century, which, of course, has just begun, that will be as profound, if not more profound, than that. And therein is the source of my enthusiasm for becoming a scientist and for what I hope would be the enthusiasm of others who, even if they don't become a scientist, would at least stimulate some interest in scientific literacy so that the universe just doesn't pass them by.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share today with the listeners of Earth and Sky?
Yeah, I'd like to say that in Death by Black Hole, each of the chapters in there is sort of my effort to connect the reader to the universe in a very sort of friendly, comfortable way, as though we're all sitting around a fireplace and chatting about what's interesting, and in some cases just simply what's cool to know in the universe. And so it's my offering to the public, and it's the summary of all that I've gleaned scientifically and pedagogically about what people should know about the universe and what people would want to know about the universe. And so that's my offering.
That was Neil deGrasse Tyson on Death by Black Hole, his latest book. This has been an Earth and Sky presentation.
We're at earthsky.org.